Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff answering questions emailed to me about Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism. I take questions of general interest, not technical philosophy and not practical politics. I do this every week or two and post it on my website. It's also available on iTunes. If you want to ask me a philosophical question, feel free. Just send it to leonard@peikoff.com. And my last name is Peikoff, P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F as in off. Is providing accurate information to the extorting government objective and rational? Well, that depends what information. It depends what do you gain by lying, what kind of value, and what are the chances that you're going to be caught and how severe is the punishment? And what kind of information is the government asking for? Is it legitimate? For instance, the census is mandated by the founding documents because it's the only way they can determine representation in Congress, according to the population, you know, so that all throughout the country there's the same number of seats per representative. I think that's why the census was mandated. Now, when they go into 10,000 questions about lifestyle and what you purchase and who you sleep with, etc., that's certainly they have no business asking, and I wouldn't give it unless you're going to be punished for it, and I don't know whether you are or not. In general, you could ask the question, what do you do about bad laws in a society? Do you obey them? Do you flout them? What? Well, if it's basically a rational society, even if there are many bad laws, then the proper view is you obey the laws and you try to change them by persuasion. And up to a certain point of the social development, that is the only reasonable course, because if you argue, disobey whatever laws you disagree with, you're at tantamount to saying, there are no laws. No one's going to obey any. We're not going to live by law. So we'll be back to anarchy. Now, on the other hand, if you're in a dictatorship, you have no obligation to obey any laws. You should revolt if possible, escape if possible, or do whatever is necessary by your own judgment to survive or to make survival bearable. They have no moral force on you, the laws. But now the question that we face is we are not in a basically rational society, and we are not in a dictatorship. We are in a truly mixed situation. And I would say that at this point, neither of those characterizations apply. That is to say, I don't think we have an intrinsic obligation to obey every law because it's a law. Except we should and must respect the rights of others. We can't go around killing and stealing. On the other hand, we're counting on those laws. So, assuming we don't have the ability for a revolution, you can't say flat out you have no obligation to obey any laws. I don't think there is an answer. I think that each person has to judge according to the value involved and the punishment if he is caught. This would apply to many issues. And where the exact point comes in at which you say, for this, I'll risk the punishment. For this, my values are not that threatened, I'll obey. I don't know how anybody can draw a line there. The only line is, as I say, you cannot violate the rights of others. To refuse to give to the government something is illegitimately demanding. I cannot say that that is wrong when that is becoming a dominant state of our country. but nor can I say, except to say, be careful, nor can I say where the point comes. To me, it's like the beard. You know, the ancient sophists used to say, as an example of man's helplessness, you never can tell when a man has a beard, because if you put one hair on a shaved chin, obviously he has no beard. And same for 2, 3, 4. Now, at some point, you say he's got a beard, but no one can say the exact number or the exact point when that happened. Now, I don't think that proves man's helplessness, but it does prove that there are continua where you can't say this is the exact turning point. And I think in this case, it's a beard. So you have to decide when you're ready to shave. By the way, I cannot be interpreted as having advocated the breaking of any law, because it is illegal to advocate the breaking of laws. So mine is a purely theoretical discussion, which, like all philosophy, has no application to the real world. Are most people today second-handers? Well, first of all, I wouldn't distinguish today from most of history. I don't think in this regard we're much worse than most societies through history. The exception being ancient Greece and possibly the Enlightenment from 1750, say, to 1850. But apart from those two, I think all societies have been pretty much the same. And I would say, yes, they have been second-handers in part, in philosophic issues, in regard to basic values, in regard to the direction of life. They have gone by authority and lived accordingly. But you can exonerate people because, in part, they are not philosophers, and it's a very daunting task to undertake to challenge all of philosophy and create a new one. Moreover, most people, however secondhand they are in their personal relationships, are not necessarily so in work, which is their best area. And even in some special hobby that they might have that they're more first-handed about. Even Keating in The Fountainhead, for example. We got a glimpse of a better side, although it was too late for him, in his attitude to painting. Remember that Keating was an abstraction that Ayn Rand reached by taking certain dominant traits and then omitting the better elements with which they're mixed in reality. So the implication is not that The Fountainhead depicts naturalistically people as they are. It depicts the second-handedness of people, which is the feature which is real and which was Rourke's enemy. But that doesn't mean in reality there isn't another aspect. Right here. Here's a question with which I can sympathize. I am struggling with the problem of working regularly and efficiently on my first novel. I would categorize my problem as weariness from years of struggling, not simply laziness. Forcing myself to sit down and work is the answer to breaking the logjam, but isn't that just capitulating to duty? What do you think? Well, I certainly know what it's like, given the number of years that I've spent on different books. It's certainly natural to feel weariness, overcome by struggle, laziness, that you're doing it out of duty, etc. That is inherent in creative writing, at least as I understand it, because you're a counting on your subconscious, over which you have no direct control. Some confusion is stopping you. Some vacuum, something unknown is stopping you, but you don't know what it is. There's therefore periods where nothing comes to you. And Ayn Rand herself had these periods, and she called them the squirms. That to her was the worst part of the creative writer. Now, I may say not all creative writers have that. There's a writer, Isaac Asimov, who's dead, who wrote a vast array, mystery, science fiction, history, and of good quality, the ones I read. And he wrote over 400 books, well over 400. So you can't say that, he was paralyzed by the squirm. But certainly I am, or rather I was. And one day, somebody gave me the real means out. Maybe that would help you. He said, even if you don't know what to write, you can always write something. You can always keep typing by asking on paper what you don't know. If only I knew this. I don't understand this. I'm confused by that. Fill up pages, just emptying yourself of what's confusing you. And then you will often find that if you do that, and then reread it from a different perspective a day or so later, you suddenly realize, well, I really don't have to know this, and these two are really the same, et cetera, et cetera. And at a certain point, you get back on track. Now, there are many, many reasons for paralysis. I can't give all course there. You may be, for instance, trying to sneak into your book all kinds of things that are not relevant to your theme, which you haven't clearly delimited, and the result is your subconscious goes on strike and won't give it to you because it knows this is not relevant. Or you may have made the worst mistake of all, which is you don't really understand your theme, but you're writing it in the hopes that it'll become clear as you write. You've got to separate and do your thinking first, and only when you say, I understand, now I write. Those are two very difficult tasks, but to try to do them together is murder. Now you say, isn't it duty? Well, it is in the sense that on any given day, you have to force yourself to do it. Ayn Rand used to sit at her desk and play solitaire till she could bring herself to start writing. I used to pace back and forth in my office, getting closer and closer to the desk, but with the feeling I don't have to go all the way yet until finally I had. It's just like dropping out of a plane with a parachute in the war. It's not sacrifice, but it feels like it in the moment that you jump. So all I can do is say, good luck. It for me, it's always been an excruciating process. But if it's worth it to you, if that's the thing you really want, persist. But if you can think of anything you want even equally or a tiny bit more, run like the plague from creative writing. In Anthem, Ayn Rand writes, I need no warrant for being, the hero says, I need no warrant for being and no word of sanction upon my being. I am the warrant and the sanction. What is the difference? Well, you should really, if we're going to simply words, you should be asking the dictionary, not me. So I had to look it up. But they're very close. The best I could gather is this. Warrant means authorization or justification. So by saying you need no warrant, you're saying, metaphysically, I'm a totally self-sufficient, independent, autonomous being. Nothing external is relevant to my being. I need no argument, no external purpose imposed. I am like the law of gravity. I am a fact of reality. Of course, I have free will, and that's it. I don't need anything outside. And by saying I am the sanction, notice that she says no word of sanction. In other words, nobody can come, is required to come forth, or is allowed to come forth and say, this is your validation. This is what makes you good. This is what makes you someone justified in living. You are metaphysically self-sufficient. Your value is self-sufficient. You are autonomous. It's like a stress, are those two terms. Thank you. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peikoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most famous novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. Thanks for listening.